Welcome to the Round 8 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week with FB Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, buddy. Coming from the car again. This time in Cooper Petey. There's lots of flies around. You just have to watch them if you're watching the YouTube clip. There's dust everywhere, but I think the internet's working. And I definitely watched a bit of footy on the weekend. And I think we both had decent weekends in Supercoach, mate.
Heck, yes, we did. And I'm one of the few left on the no-gone train. And finally, he scored a 60. What? Thank God.
And lots of people had him captain, too.
Well, I think I called Grundy as the top pick last week. That was pretty good. You went with that, Mark?
I did go with Grundy.
You didn't go with McRae?
I had McRae lined up like till about 20 minutes before the game, and I'm like, nah, Gold Coast don't have a ruckman. Grundy's going to dominate. So
yeah,
got on it.
You had it here first, buddy.
Marcus is up and about. Hey,
and you sent me a message. We are on the exact same total score. Round 8, neck and neck. What?
Is this year 13 or is it year 12?
13.
Year 13, we have never been equal ranked, equal score before. Round 8 this year, it happens. And unfortunately, I have been in front all season until here. And if I hopefully pull away this week and stay ahead, we can say that you never actually got in front of me all season.
Oh, but, no.
That is pretty crazy to be exact same rank. So I think we are both ranked 10,415, which was a bit of a move up. I think I moved up 5K, still languishing a little bit, but hopefully this is our time to shine, right? Like once people have made some trades, heading into the buys, later into the season.
Yep. Any teams that have forsaken their bench this year seems to be panicking a lot about finishing their teams as well.
My bench sucks.
So it's going to be interesting. I know Stephen May is a hot topic this week and whether or not people have to take slightly more risky decisions. Not that, I mean, Stephen May minus the seven's been smashing it, so definitely good value. I'm sure we're going to talk about him. I know in our group chat, a lot of people were like, it's Frederick May and we'll call it a show. Not a lot of questions coming through on social media, et cetera, this week. So I don't know if it's because it's an easier week or people are frustrated after the weekend that was. A lot of low scores, probably people not wanting to check their team. We record pretty early, and so potentially that's it, Mark. But we're up and about. Yeah. Before we get on to the show, Mark's Tales from the Roads. All right. What's the highlight for the last week?
So we went to Flinders Ranges, which is in South Australia. It is an amazing place. Like at some stage in your life, everyone should get out to the Flinders Ranges. I can't believe I didn't really know it existed or what it looked like. Some beautiful driving around there, some great bushwalking. Had a great pie at one of the pubs. It's a lot like the Grampians in Victoria, if you've ever been there before. The Grampians had some real hidden gems and some probably easier walks, but the Flinders Ranges is just magical. It looks like another planet. It's really cool.
Awesome. I saw a few photos. Life's looking good. And Cooper Petey is delivering a strong enough internet connection that we can see each other and record the show. So happy times.
That's actually pretty amazing, the internet that we've had. I think everywhere we've actually camped, there's been 4G. We haven't had a problem at all. Eventually, we'll get onto some more remote free camping stuff where we won't. But internet around Australia is doing us pretty well so far.
Get rid of good work. Who are you with?
Telstra. Not plugging right, Telstra. Well, Telstra are amazing unless you have to deal with them and then they suck.
Oh, well, I mean, I was about to say, you know, if any Telstra people are listening, I mean, we're up for a sponsorship, but
well,
after
No. Actually, I did ring them this week and say, hey, mate, I want to upgrade my plan. It's an extra $50 for an extra 100 gig because the kids are just chewing through the data, playing a bit of Minecraft and watching the footy. The footy takes up heaps of gig, watching it on the TV.
Hmm.
And they offered me an extra 100 gig for the same price. So Telstra, get on
Ooh.
It.
Yeah, okay, sick. All right, so I hope some commercial managers listening. We will take sponsorships. All right, as we do each week, around the grounds. I obviously scored high because I was behind you, so I'll kick things off. 21.56, that was 12.54th for the week. So pretty happy with that after I think last week was top 5,000 for the round. So the team is said to be pulling its weight a little bit after a very slow start. I'm slightly hopeful that this keeps up. I mean, Gawn scoring 60 will certainly continue to help. I traded in Rowan Marshall this week because of the whole Flynn situation. Flynn will continue to struggle. I think Steve Johnson said that Mumford's their number one ruck now.
Wow.
So I thought I just need to solve this. Yep. I brought in Rowan Marshall, probably cost me 30K, but his break even's now 96 or so. I'm happy to have paid that premium to. I mean, the alternative was pick up Gawn and not finish my second upgrade, which was Steel Sidebottom. And I still have 100K in bank. So I'm pretty happy with how I've pushed that cash situation, took the risk on Gawn when I could have traded in a ruck this week. And fortunately, he scored 63. Cozzy, since he's had to play on field with Lockie Jones out, 100 last week, obviously 66 this week, continues to go up in price. So very happy with that. The back line is looking so good. So Tom Stewart is now really coming to the fore. He's averaging 110 now. He's the highest ranked defender. So I'm very happy with him. Had reasonable amount of confidence, probably more so than other communities. Obviously, things can turn, but very happy to see him do well. I think Lloyd and Mills also doing really well, and Laird. So very happy. Ridley obviously becomes cheap next week. I've got Sidebottom, Zorko, Zeeble, Marshall. So my forward line and back line are looking very, very primo-ish, which I'm pretty psyched about. Just got to start filling in some of these premium mids. Good week, except for, as per usual, Patrick Bloody Cripps. Just dragging the team down. Cripper, 450,000 means that this pipe dream of trading him out, maybe on an inflection point, is getting slimmer and slimmer. We're pretty happy about Tim Taranto, though. Scored 139, obviously a BOG performance. Happy days. How about you, Mark? How was your team this week?
It's amazing how much longer your around the grounds are when you end. Wow. I scored 20.95. Unfortunately, I traded Cozzy to Chapman. That just keeps backfiring every minute. Chapman potentially injured as well. Taranto was the big deal. I ended up bringing Brayshaw into my mids, which was a great result week one, 121. Joey Danaher, I've had a few good weeks lately, doing really well. A few rookies probably did okay that were on the field. My bench is just awful, though. I had 3 scores on my bench. For the entire bench, and 36 was the highest out of all of them.
So. I think I was even slimmer. I had 1 playing bench this week, so maybe I shouldn't be that excited about finishing my team. A few rookie options this week, though, headlined by Frederick, so we'll get on to them. Before we do, as we do each week, a look to our top-ranked guy in our Supercoach Coach Patreon group. And this week, that is still Travis's team, styling and profiling. He's got 21, 29 and moved up into the top 100, sitting at 90th. So we'll continue cheering Travis along. The leader of that will walk away with cash prize at the end of this season. Let's get into the questions for the week, Mark. And we'll start off with this first one from JB. Pretty simple one, he says. Is Fredericks a must-have and how secure is his job? If Collier Dawkins goes okay next week, same question. Some people may even be tempted to go early on him, depending on whether or not they can trade in a backline rookie. That's probably my main question with Fredericks is, you know, whether or not you want to be risking putting a rookie on field if you've got a dead bench. So I've got Lockie Jones and Highmore just sputting it up. I trade in Fredericks, that leaves me with Fredericks on field for a while. If Highmore doesn't come back, Jones doesn't come back, Fredericks gets dropped or injured, or it's pretty scary territory. I think I saw Highmore had 30 posies and 14 marks in the VFL. So
it doesn't seem to matter.
So I guess, is he a must-have? Are you considering him, considering our bench situation? I'm guessing most of us want to upgrade this week, so side-swapping a rookie is not ideal. I'm really hoping Highmore comes back. That means that I can trade Fredericks in with a little bit more security. But if he's not, I'm actually thinking I might pass this week. I assume outside of that consideration, that potential of, you know, increasing your back rookie risk with non-playing players already on the bench. He is a must-have probably in other situations, like if you've got any downgrades on your bench there. Or what do you reckon about Fredericks, man?
Yeah, I think that the way you've summed it up is really good. So he is a must-have just because there's been so few rookies available this year. He's looked really good over 2 games. That's enough to be bringing anyone in at this stage. You sort of have to punt on these guys. We are looking for downgrades. He's one that's available. Just looking at the Port Adelaide injury list, because they do have quite a few out, but they're out for a little while, most of them. So you'd think that he's spot, like he's played pretty well. You'd think that his spot would look pretty good for at least a few more weeks. I do think that the caution that you gave, because I would actually be in that situation where I would have Jones, Highmore and Fredericks in defence if I brought him in. And that could turn sour pretty quickly. Like one bad game from Fredericks, he gets dropped and then all of a sudden you're looking at donuts. So yeah, that does get tricky. What about if you weren't looking for a downgrade? Would you possibly consider trading a Highmore Jones across to Fredericks to try and get some cash generation going in your team?
Yeah, look, if you can't hit a premium this week, then you'd very much consider it. I think the challenge is with Caleb Daniels, Stephen May types kind of bottoming out this week, the temptation is to just force an upgrade through this week. And that's, I guess, linking me to think, well, do I just go early on RCD? We had Cochin obviously go out with a hamstring injury. That bodes well for him for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, we're getting to the buys as well, right? So this whole rookie risk situation is more and more unnerving the closer we get to that. So round 8 coming up, then we got 9, 10, 11, and then the buys already. So the players you trade in now, before the buys, they'll only have 4 price rises if they're on the bubble this week.
Which is kind of enough to be trading them out through the buys if you need to.
But you really kind of want them to play the next 3 in order to be able to trade them out if they get dropped at any point prior to that. You don't have a lot of time for them to break back into the team, so you might be trading them out under 200K just to try and get players on. It's pretty hairy. And so maybe that might push me to say, you know, it's a decent week to potentially clean up your backbench a little bit if you were really worried about your cash generation more broadly. So if you're struggling in your mid bench, your forward bench, and your back bench, you can upgrade this week, but next week you'll run out of an upgrade anyway, then maybe this might be a decent week to sideswap a rookie. What do you think about that?
To your point a little bit earlier that there's a bit of value in premiums available this week, I think that potentially that becomes a priority with a couple of rookies potentially becoming available next week. There's a few, I think.
My potential other point to consider is, you know, we're really wanting to get the best scorers in, right? So most of us will have a template for our finishing team and then we wait for the players that we want to drop enough for us to pick them up at the ideal price. And sometimes you make compromises on guys that have a real big premium value attached to them like May this week. But, you know, let's say you don't have Ridley. I really want Ridley next week. If I force an upgrade through this week, next week I can't hit Ridley. I'm probably better off not forcing the upgrade. And this is really only if you're talking super slim benches, etc. Maybe better off holding off on May this week, maybe taking the chance to clean up the team. Maybe not, but I think there are some potential reasons to also think about holding off a little bit.
Yeah, and I think really you're getting into the May question there, which we'll probably explore a little bit later.
Outside of him, are there any other rookies that you are looking at this week?
No, not this week. I mean, I think Collier Dawkins, as you've suggested, is possibly the one. Highly rated, been in the ears system a couple of years, and there's reasons why he would get games and score reasonably well. It's just tricky going off one game. If you can get 2 weeks of information, that's always a smarter move if you can.
I mean, there's a few other rookies on the bubble, but they're unfortunately a lot in the back line. So Nick Murray, back line. Nathan Murphy on the bubble as well. Backline, Mark Keane, backline. It makes things a little bit tough if you're looking for other rookies. Luke Parks, 133K, played his third game, backline. I think Caleb Poulter made his debut, mid-forward, another mid-forward swingman from Collingwood, but you've got another week to look at him. So I just think it's probably also just looking at the other options that are available, considering they're all backline players. Frederick, obviously the one that stands out, averaging 81 for the first 2 games. So it's either Frederick, go early on RCD. So what if you don't want a backline rookie because you've got a slim bench?
Yeah.
If you've got a lot of cash in bank, is this a week where you potentially might look at skipping a downgrade and waiting for RCD next week? Or you think with the rookie situation, you'd really just try and push and take the risk in the backline?
No, I think that's right. Like, if you don't have to downgrade this week, then you probably don't need to force it, especially in the back line. I guess we just have to take playing rookies when they come up. I didn't realize that Parks had actually played three games, as you mentioned, and he's only 133,000. So he is potentially another guy this week that you could get, but Fredericks is obviously scoring way, way better than that, so you would take him ahead. With an 80 average, like, you're gambling a lot, but I will be making an effort to bring in Frederick this week.
His break-even is negative 88. So he scores another 80. He goes up to 200K in 1 week, scores even a 50, still goes up to, you know, like 180 something. So even if he plays this week, just because he's averaging so well so far, it just reduces a lot of the risk if you're forced to downgrade in a couple of weeks because he gets dropped or whatever else. All right, let's move on to Stephen May. He's obviously a hot topic this week. David Baker's asking about him and whether he's worth getting in at a bargain price. Now, the challenge that a lot of people are having is there's a lot of good backline options. We started with many of them. Stephen May averaged 95 last year. It was his first time at that sort of average, but it was also in that weird year where, you know, I mean, variance just plays a bigger part because there was less minutes, everything else, scaling worked a bit differently. And there's a lot of contention in the backline for points. You obviously got Jake Lever, you got Christian Salem, and you got Stephen May. They're all close to 100 average, I think. It's just riches of points at the moment there. And obviously they're stringing together wins. It's a bit of a tough one.
When you put it like that, it is tricky when you've got Oliver, Petrarca and Gorn as well. Like, you're not going to have all six of those guys averaging over 100 or pushing 110, 120. It's going to, at some stage, that's not sustainable.
And North pushed the team a surprising amount, didn't they?
They did. They were in front at one point in the third quarter, I think.
The thing is, though, in general, they're cheap guys that tend to present themselves through the year. Often the ones we want to get are the ones where they've had an early injury and so they've deflated even more than they really should be. And if you miss out on a player like that and they average 9,500 from here on out, probably 100 is more painful. 95, if you can bring in a guy that's 105 instead, you can maybe stomach some of that pain because the value can be counteracted with upside. But, you know, if May averages 100 for the rest of the season, you don't pick him now. It's just a straight up mistake, right?
That's a big call. Like, that's probably right. It's a little bit weird. And you did mention the reason why it's a bit weird earlier, which is potentially we have some very high averaging defenders. And so you might not be talking about getting a better guy doing 105. It might be 110, 115. And there's only, like, a lot of teams have only got one defender spot left. So that does complicate things a little bit, I think.
So I want Ridley, obviously, for my team personally.
Yeah, that's, I think, just that an pretty comfortably gift.
Comfortably gives me what I feel like are the big heavy punches in the back line, which is a bit lucky. So it's a unique situation to go, well, I could take a risk on the sixth. But then I look at Lockie Whitfield coming back, scoring an 80 in his first game back, and go, oh, well, do I look at him as potentially, you know, a unique point of difference that can come home strong later? Do I want to see, give him a chance, you know? Yeah, a bit interesting.
It is, and I think it is complicated by Caleb Daniel as well. Basically the same price as May and has a much better scoring history. So May's interesting, I think, because we've never really seen him do an extended period with Lieber in the side and Melbourne playing well. And there was one game earlier in the year, it might have been round one, where the opposition were just kicking the ball up and May was just marking absolutely every single time they kicked the ball long. Super, super impressive. And Lieber's been doing a similar thing at different stages as well. May doesn't have that scoring history, but he's in the Ridley mold, right? Like, he's playing that Ridley-type role, and Ridley showed the amount that you can average doing that role with the kick-ins and the intercept marks. My concern with May individually would be durability. So he's played 19 games in 2014. That's the most ever, 17, 18, a few times, but he's missed, like, significant chunks of games. He's already missed one this year. That durability really has an effect on the price. So you're getting him at a discount, but he's coming with that durability risk and the unknown scoring potential risk. So I think he's pretty obvious this week. I think that your situation where you have a lot of the big guns and you're not so worried, I'd be more inclined to pick him up. But my situation where I don't quite have all the big guns, but I have like three of them. Yeah, I'm a bit worried about that he comes at value, but there's some hidden risks there where we don't really know what he's going to score, and he does have the durability risk. And I think that he's similar with Caleb Daniel in that way. So Caleb's scoring is probably maybe more predictable, although there's been some reasons why we might disagree with that this year. He's had a couple of low scores, which he hadn't had previously. And his durability is better than Mays, but also not great. And has missed a game already this year. Both of them coming cheap, but with a fair bit of risk.
The fact that Caleb's averaged 99 and 100 in the last 2 years, I mean, Bailey Williams obviously going down has been great for him since, right? Like his role, you know, people talk about his role being great again on the weekend. You can tell he's getting the opportunity out of the half-back line. I really was looking quite closely at May, but I think I'd be tempted to almost say Caleb Daniels ahead, right? 99, 100, now looking like back to the role that we want. Obviously, Williams coming back in is a concern again.
Yeah, so Williams listed as 1 to 2 weeks, which is not very long. And Bailey Dale on the weekend was still taking a bunch of those kick-ins, so it wasn't totally back to the Caleb Daniel of old role.
That is true. He had a dominant amount of disposals, though, and yeah, but that's a good point about the risk on him returning, and certainly something that people should keep in mind. Yeah, I don't know, 66, 78, and then obviously that 19, but you know, in terms of downside, that's not awful, right?
In the past, it hasn't been awful for defenders. Whether you're willing to take that risk this year is potentially a different matter. It's a bit tricky. I think that they're both really good picks. I actually think that both of them are really good picks at the price, really good gambles. Both of them could be season defining and really, really make a difference to if we don't get this cash generation. So being able to fill a premium spot for 400,000, I mean, it's just magic. And that is something that could have a huge impact on you being able to get full premium and get some of these crappy rookie scores off your field. I'm seeing that a lot of teams sort of pushing Laird to the mids in order to make it happen and doing some sort of stuff where you may end up with a less than premium midfield as a result. There's some forwards available that are also going to be cheap coming up. It's high risk. I don't think they're totally like must-haves. I think that they're pretty even picks. Personally, I'd probably have May a little bit ahead, just with Daniel's role change. I think that that's a little bit more permanent with Williams coming back in a couple of weeks. So yeah, May's a really good chance of making my team. I don't think it's like super obvious though.
May's got one of those great roles where intercept marks, obviously great. He had 14 marks on the weekend. And he takes a lot of kickouts for Melbourne. So you look at Salem, you look at May, you look at Lever. May's got the most sustainable role easily, right? And obviously with that discount, it's pretty fantastic. I'd say just off the back of kicking duties and intercept marking, as much as I like to look to history to pick, considering the change up this year with Williams, and I would go with May over Daniel as well this week.
Yeah, I think it goes one of two ways. I don't think it's going to go sideways. It'll work out really poorly and he'll get injured, or he'll average 80 for the year, or it'll work out great and he'll average over 100 for the year. And I think that depends on your risk tolerance a little bit.
I am looking at Ridley next week, who's, even though he's cheap, it's still going to be 500 plus K. And then I'm going to try and get Gordon in another couple of weeks after that. And he'll drop in price, but he'll still likely be 620.
Both of those are guys that I already have in my team. So hearing you say that really sucks.
But, you know, that means I have to keep cash in bank the next few weeks. And whether or not I want to blow all my load this week on somebody else.
I don't think that's how you should say that.
All right, Mark. We'll move to this question from Henry Katz on Twitter. He's got short at D5. He's got Laird in the middle. So he's kind of finished up. So this is what you were talking about before. The people were thinking, with the value on offer in the back line, do I just take an extra premium? You know, if one of them gets injured, maybe even a May, you know, I'll swap them out later on, but I'm getting a cheap premium now. Gives me redundancy. Maybe they're a swing player. I mean, I've done this in the past. I don't know if May and Daniel are the guys to necessarily do it on if you already have a completed team. Certainly, if you're switching them out of position 1 week and then back in. So I've got Cozzy. If I trade a premium defender in this week, I'll probably move Laird into the midfield, and then the week after, Cozzy back out through the midfield. I think that's perfectly okay, obviously, just for the 1 week. But you know, on a longer term basis, would you still consider it, or is that getting a bit too sort of greedy in terms of chasing value unnecessarily?
So I think the way that you could win would be May posts a good score this week, his price goes up crazy, he gets injured at the end of a game or something, and then you can trade a midfielder in using the money that he's made and put Laird back. Like, it's sort of the situation you're describing. Like, if that happens, that's a win. And obviously not that he gets injured, but that it sort of fixes the team. The problem is that you end up with Laird in your midfield, and Laird's only averaging 100 at the moment. And that is behind what a premium midfielder does. So if you could pick up a premium midfielder at 450K that was only going to average 100, that's not a great result. And that's kind of what you're doing, really. You're just switching the positions. And so you're moving Laird into the midfield, and he's 10 points off what a premium would be scoring. And May might not be what a premium's scoring. And that's limiting your capacity to score overall in your team, I think. So there's situations where it could work, but I think you need everything to fall your way.
I don't mind it if you have a CJ, for example. You thinking you might trade CJ out anyway. He had his first poor game. You get to ride him until the bye and then maybe look to side swap him opportunistically, sort of thing. And in the meantime, bring in the true premium you want at the lower price. Not trade out another premium yet, because a side swap's not what you want to do at the moment. You want to continue upgrade cadence, and then, you know, side swap your mid-pricer essentially around the buys for some benefit.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move on to the next question. This one is from David Zabo on Facebook. Thoughts on Mummy at R2 and Flynn at R3 to rotate between games to avoid a donut in the ruck? So this is for people who are still stuck with the Flynn situation. How do you get out? I probably wouldn't do Mummy, but I would say Marshall this week has dipped his 30K. He's now price average basically about 100. And, I mean, Ryan has come back. It's obviously not ideal, but he still averaged 104 last year with Ryder playing alongside him. Obviously, St Kilda were playing a little bit better at that stage, so winning teams probably arguably going to deliver a few more points. But we've seen forward rucks do well in the past just because, you know, I think David Hale having enough stats in hit-outs and kicking goals, it's worked out previously. I think, to me, that seems like a pretty decent out if you're still dealing with the whole Flint situation. But obviously, I'm biased toward that because that's what I did last week.
I can see the temptation, right? Because Mummy has had a couple of huge seasons before where he's averaged really well. They were a long time ago, though, like 7 and 10 years ago. His first three games, amazing. 125, 135, 104. Like, for 470K, which is currently priced at, you would take that in a second, and that would make the plan work. I think that I probably wouldn't take that plan either, though. Just Mummy's nearly 35 years old, and I think that we're going to need Flynn's cash. So I really think that if for my own team, I'm going to have to downgrade Flynn because I don't have a lot of other rookies making enough money. Now, obviously, I'd like Flynn to play a few more games before I did that, which might be tricky given what you said earlier about Mummy now being the number one ruck, and Flynn still has a break even of 4, so he still has a bit more money to make. But yeah, I don't think that you're going to want to keep Flynn all season because it's a lot of money to have on the bench. So that's why I probably wouldn't go down that track.
All right. Next one is from My Name is Frogger. Many will be down to 26, 27 green dots or playing players. When do we start addressing cleaning up the bench? So we referred to this briefly around Frederick. It's a tough one. Do you wait until you're faced with a donut and just hope some of these players come back? Or at some stage, do you worry about your cash generation eroding to a point where you're better off biting the bullet now, grabbing the momentum and being able to trade out through the buys? Because you're starting to get to a point where if you side swap too late, you're not giving those rookies enough chance to go up in price to get rid of them before you finish your teams. It's really like, this is one of the tougher equations. I think we sort of had this foreshadowed earlier on in the year where we talked about sort of the medical sub sort of causing some chaos, and yeah, it just didn't look like there were rookies coming through, and we've certainly started with a few stinkers. Yeah, it's a bit challenging. What do you think?
26, 27, I wish. I think that it's tricky because you've got the Highmores, you've got the Joneses, the Brockmans, and you're kind of like, oh God, I hope these guys just come back. A bit like you with Cozzy, like just waiting on Cozzy and then he comes back and dominates and you make a crap load of money. Like, they can come back and actually work out. I think you also make some really good points there around let's try and fix these rookie benches and try and get the cash generation early in the season. The problem is that who do you go to? So you got Frederick this week. Give me someone else that you'd be comfortable to correct to. So let's set the standard at, say, maybe a Brockman or a Highmore. Who would you be willing to correct one of them to that you're confident will get you enough money, right? So if you're getting no money from a trade or like 50K from a trade, you need to be pretty bloody sure that the player that you bring in is going to make you at least 150. Because if they only make you 50 and then they get dropped, you're in a very tricky situation.
Yeah. I really don't like trading players out for less than 200K because it feels like locking in a loss. even James Rowe, like we got a question about him that we probably won't cover on this show, but one of our patrons asked about him. We'll probably cover it then, looking at timing. You know, you can trade Rowe out, but you're probably going to have to do two down, one up for that, you know. So, yes, it can help your cash generation, but at the same time, you're also locking in a loss. I kind of feel like with this situation, you know, we've run with Jones and Highmore for a little while. Until I'm forced to the trade, I'm just going to keep rolling the dice because Highmore comes back 1 week, just 1 week, and it makes a huge difference. It's not an ideal situation to be in, but I think a lot of us are in that way. And until you're forced into a donut, it really feels like a better situation just continuing to run the risk and not throwing your plans into array or not doing poor trades to try and correct something. And, you know, to your point, it's not like there are two obvious rookie options this week anyway. And if there are, they're both in the back line. So, I mean, do you really lock in two sideways like Highmore and Jones to those two? And then if you have the Cozzy situation where Highmore ends up coming back in 2 weeks because God knows why, an injury, it's a pretty tough one. So I would love to deal with it. I just don't see, to your point, good ways out. So I'm probably going to hold off. And I think we got questions like, why wasn't Jai Farah talked about a bit more last week? You know, it was 170K. The reason why is we're struggling to complete our team. So when you look at a downgrade, you really want to, as best you can, just try and look at those bottom out options because it's really all about cash maximization at the moment. And maybe Farah will prove us wrong and average 350 and blow our socks off. But in that interim, like that's an extra 70K that you didn't get to use on your team until you trade Farah out. Like that's your investment. And that's not negligible when we're like literally scraping the barrel and talking about being forced into 400K options. And I guess the community is fortunate. There's a few decent ones coming up. I know Heaney will be at about 330 or something. But yeah, I think that's another thing to keep in mind is just, you know, you got to look at not just who you're trading in at this stage, but really being quite disciplined with who you're trading out and trying to squeeze the most value out of them as well, because that's the other way that you can sort of counterbalance the risks and the challenges that we're facing. So final thing, I just want to, you know, throw this one in. David Anderson, 63, is gone. If any non-Gorn owners, he's now averaging 130, which means that he's averaging 10 less than he costs. He's about to drop to 630. So if you've hung around this long, surprisingly, the narrative has flipped a little bit. Definitely plan your trades to bring him in 2 weeks. That's not something you want to push any further. We got lucky that he's had one absolutely poor game. He's definitely running into some tougher opposition now. He's got Hickey this week, then Pitney, then Riley O'Brien, then Tim English, Stephen Martin, then McInerney, then Grundy. So much tougher than his first seven rounds, but doesn't stop us needing to bring in one of the top scorers of the game. So if you've hung on this long, make sure that you start now mapping out your trades to the buy. We've got a few questions around the buys. We won't get to tackle them in this show. We'll have a bit of a chat about them on the Patreon bonus we're about to record. But you want to be, one of the general tips is start mapping out your buys. When players drop in price, you need to make plans for them to bring them in. So I need to plan for Ridley in next week, Gorn the week after that. And that might sort of inform that I might have to take a Caleb Daniel this week if I want to do three upgrades in a week. Otherwise, I may have to forfeit an upgrade entirely this week to make sure I have cash in back for those next two upgrades. So definitely something that you should be thinking about in the lead up to the buys, and also looking at May and Daniel in the context of the buys and how that plays out for your own personal teams, making sure you keep a good spread because chances are the rookies will cause us headaches and not be much help during the buys at this current rate. So you want to make sure that your premiums are as well spread because you won't have the same safety blanket of rookies. And because we've had so many injuries, we don't have the same safety blanket of side swapping premiums in order to avoid donuts. Anything to add on that before we head to a captain's corner, Mark?
No, pretty tricky week, I would say. And I think it's a bit every week, right? Like last week we talked about butterfly effect and that the decisions were going to have a big impact longer term on your team. And this week it feels a bit similar, that these weeks are just getting harder to navigate.
And this is where long-term planning, doing the discipline thing, years of experience.
Boring.
That's where it comes into our advantage. So fingers crossed we get back up there over the bias. It's going to be a very hectic period and I think we're going to see a bit of a reshuffle. I think I saw somebody jump up from like 4,000 or something up into top 200 on the weekend. Like they're very dramatic jumps happening at the moment. So it's pretty tight up front and lots of opportunity. All right, Mark, Captain's Corner. Last week was obviously a ripper, so why don't we go again? Hopefully try and have another good pick. Have you had a squiz at all at who you might be going with?
I think it's a pretty tricky week with the order of games this week. I think I would consider Gorn into McRae. I just wonder who Kerno goes to. Like, is it Bont or is it McRae? Because Carlton playing a tagger every week at the moment, which could be a little bit tricky. But yeah, I think that you'd want to give Gorn first crack to bounce back this week with Grundy playing Goldstein. Or do you prefer Grundy in that situation?
So Goldstein, interestingly enough, hasn't fared brilliantly against Gorn. I know Gorn had a poor one, but Gorn was actually projected to score 170 against him this last week, if you hit your Supercoach projections on the main website. And that's because Goldstein seems to do well against some of the poorer ruckmen, but the super tall, super agile, top-tier rucks, he's tended to struggle a bit against. Last year, Grundy only scored 85 against Goldstein, but he has tended to struggle previously. 133 in the prior two. I probably would go Gorn versus Hickey. Hickey's obviously play pretty well, but apparently he's playing with still like a little bit of damage to his knee. It's just that the players that can play, like apparently Goods had played previously with a tear in his knee, so like he got back after a week, but he's not 100%. That may bode well for Gorn, and just champions like to rebound. And
for not being 100%, Jeezy was good against the Cats on the weekend.
Yeah, Reece Stanley's Reece Stanley, hot and cold. So yeah, I'd definitely go Gorn probably as the VC this week. I think you're saying order of games is a challenge, and I definitely agree with that. I think Sam Walsh is having a
But it doesn't matter year. Because we have so many loopholes.
That is true. Yeah, if you have Chapman, he ends up being out, for example, or Treacy in my situation, or Fullerton, both playing the last game. I would be pretty tempted to just run with the big dogs again. So you've got to look at Gorn, Grundy, and McRae, probably the main standouts. I don't think there's anybody else that looks particularly extra attractive this week. Sam Walsh is in ripping form, so him as a backup captaincy I don't think is the worst, but probably if you've got Gorn, maybe Grundy into Gorn, otherwise Gorn into McRae or Grundy into McRae all seem like pretty good options this week without a particularly standout option. Am I missing anyone, you reckon?
Depends on your team and depends who you've got. No one's really screaming out to me, though, other than
yeah, looking at the matchups, there's not like a particularly crazy option. Alrighty, let's wrap up for another week. Head to the Patreon bonus. All the best on the road for the coming week. Where to next, Mark?
Uluru's next. Never been before, so pretty pumped. The whole family's pretty pumped about Uluru, Kings Canyon, Alice Springs the next few weeks.
Sick. All right. Good luck, listeners. Very interesting week as we head into the buys. And we're now into multi-week planning, which is always where the week gets sorted from the chaff. So all the best. See ya.
See ya. Let's get crazy.